Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
And welcome back to Big and Night. Huge thanks to Pete Sweeney, Editor-in-Chief, ArrowheadPride.com, joining us at Big Whiskey's out here in Overland Park, two locations here in Lee's Summit as well. Great appetizer specials throughout the day, 3 to 6 p.m. for $5. They have brunch here on Saturday and Sunday. I can't think of a better way to have a little brunch before you watch a little football. Big Whiskey's, tons of whiskey, tons of drinks. The beer, it's an incredible place, really enjoying it. Haven't been out here very much, but this is my kind of spot. I talk about my spots all the time. This is a spot that I absolutely love. It's cool, man. This is cool, man. You got the brick, you got the whiskey barrels. I mean, am I not right, guys? Am I not right? Big Whiskey's is the place to be. Big Whiskey's, that's right. We love Big Whiskey's. There's the peanut gallery right there chiming in about some Big Whiskey. Speaking of a guy that likes drinking beer, his, you know, his Twitter handle's at Barley Hop. But he's also one of the best defensive film analysts in the world. Worked for ArrowheadPride.com. His name is Craig Stout. What's up, Craig?
Hey, what's up, Bink? In the world, man, you're really selling me hard on this one. I don't know that I can live up to that sort of expectation.
Dude, I got to take you here, man. I know I've got a list of places to take you, brother, because we've got to kick it. We've got to kick it and talk some beer because I know that's one of your loves. Like mine, we share that in common, but one of your big loves is the Chiefs defense, and I've got a few things about the Chiefs defense because I've been talking a lot about this. You and I have talked a lot about this. You had a series of the Summer of Spags out that was this summer. What did you see from week one in Jacksonville to the Raiders game in week two? How are you thinking that first quarter when they were going through them like hot butter and then the way that they adjusted?
You know, I was a little worried, like everybody else, because not only was the defense not playing particularly well, the Raiders' run game was working, and that was one of the things that I had seen kind of throughout the preseason, that the run defense was good. So when I saw that the run defense wasn't working, I was a little bit worried, particularly with Mahomes still a little bit hobbled. But I'll tell you what, Kansas City, you have a defensive coordinator that will shift and change and adjust with the times. There's not a ton of tape right now out on the offenses that the Chiefs are playing right now because it's week two of the season. Steve Spagnuolo in the second quarter, third quarter, fourth quarter adjusted, took things away, and allowed the Chiefs offense to just kind of go out and do their thing and win pretty comfortably.
And the one thing about it too, Craig, is just I noticed the adjustments, and I see them all the time with Andy Reid. This offensive staff will make adjustments. Part of the problem I've seen with the Chiefs through the years is being stubborn to a core. We're going to run our defense, but the best news was I saw a defense that wanted to dictate the action. And, you know, Craig, we've seen this forever. Look at the Baltimore Ravens in their heyday. They said, you are not going to run against us. We're going to dictate the action to you. I actually saw the defense more creative with the pressures. Chris Jones, I thought, had a good game. But, man, did Steve Spagnuolo, Brendan Daly, Matt House, Dave Merritt and the crew just really change up what they did against the Raiders and caught them off guard?
Absolutely. Week one was very vanilla, particularly after Gardner Minshew came in the game and the Jacksonville Jaguars just wanted to throw short passes. Steve Spagnuolo just kind of let them do their thing and keep everything in front of them. But against the Raiders, there in that second quarter and on, Steve Spagnuolo blitzed 20% of the passing snaps. For those who don't really have a reference with that, Bob Sutton's Chiefs teams, it was about 12% of the passing snaps. But the one thing that I love the most, stunts, showing pressure, blitzes altogether, over half of the passing snaps that the Raiders had, Steve Spagnuolo showed some sort of look trying to confuse that offensive line, trying to get good matchups. It's why you saw Chris Jones get so many one-on-one looks this week, and he helped destroy that interior offensive line because he was schemed to be in good spots by Steve Spagnuolo. It was a terrific coaching job there at the second quarter on.
Are you surprised we haven't seen Reggie Ragland active? We talked a lot about him in the preseason. Some of the things he was doing, he comes in, looked better, looked fresher, looked lighter. It certainly looked like this was going to be a prove-it year for Reggie Ragland. We have not seen him. Is this just not a fit for this defense?
I think when push came to shove, that they liked Anthony Hitchens at the mic a little bit better in the base, allowing Darren Lee to play that will linebacker role. And Darren Lee, except for a couple times in coverage this week, Darren Lee has looked very good against the run. Reggie Ragland doesn't play special team snaps, so that just kind of leaves him a man without a position out there on the field. You know, Ben Neiman is actually getting on the field as the dime linebacker, replacing Anthony Hitchens. So this is a situation where their linebacker rotation, it's coming down to Dorian O'Daniel versus Reggie Ragland. I think we all know who the better special teamer is at this point. So, unfortunately, Reggie Ragland is just going to be inactive unless there's an injury.
Are you concerned about the run defense? Because I know Jacksonville ran for 81 yards, and people point out, well, they ran for 81 yards. Well, it's still 5 yards a carry. They had to throw the ball to get back into that game. So, you know, just knowing football, hey, man, they had to throw the ball. The Raiders ran the ball. High yards per carry is over 7 yards per carry. Is that something that you see getting worked out? Have the Chiefs been too concerned about the passing game before putting attention to the running game? Or is this something that you see in week 4 or 5? It's just a natural progression to be better at run defense.
I think it really is a natural progression. Again, they don't want to have a ton of tape on a lot of these offenses. I mean, particularly Josh Jacobs. Josh Jacobs has played 1 week in the NFL before Steve Spagnuolo had a game plan against him. I do think that this is a line that's learning how to play together and have a cohesive gap discipline. And we saw it several times. I actually highlighted it a few times in a post I wrote for Arrowhead Pride that went up today that is about the run defense, about the cohesiveness up front. The gap discipline is good. There's just still a couple holes here and there. And the 51-yard run that Josh Jacobs gave was, you know, Joey Ivey got blown off the line. Chris Jones wasn't able to beat his man across his face. And the linebackers weren't able to shed blocks. All of a sudden, Josh Jacobs is in the secondary. I do think that it's just a matter of time before the Chiefs' run defense puts it all together because they've got the big bodies. They do have coaches that know how to put this together. And by and large, I do think it's pretty good. They've just got a couple outlying runs that are kind of boosting those numbers right now.
Craig, we're talking to Craig Stahl, defensive film analyst, arrowheadpride.com, at Barleyhop on Twitter. Go check his latest workout, arrowheadpride.com. All right, let's look at, obviously, the Chiefs were interested in Minkah Fitzpatrick. And to me, they kind of got guys that already play the role of Minkah. Plays a lot slot corner, played a little bit boundary corner for the Dolphins last year. Even a little bit, the spot starts at linebacker, in the nickel linebacker role. I didn't think it was a great fit. Jalen Ramsey, I do. Is Jalen Ramsey, if the Chiefs were going, I don't know where you stand on this, would Jalen Ramsey make the difference to put this team over the edge?
Not only do I think that Jalen Ramsey will put this team over the edge, Jalen Ramsey tilts the field and makes Bashaud Breeland, makes Mo Claiborne, makes Kendall Fuller, whoever's going to be starting opposite him, they're going to make them better because you're going to be able to give them dedicated safety help with Honey Badger, with Juan Thornhill over the top. You can change your entire coverage scheme by getting a lockdown corner. And we saw this week, Steve Spagnuolo put Bashaud Breeland on Tyrell Williams and had him follow him around the entire day. Now, that doesn't mean that they were, you know, playing strictly man. They were still playing match zones, and they were still mixing it up a little bit. But Jalen Ramsey would get a lot of what he wants, even in this zone scheme, by being able to match up against number one wide receivers and helping shut them down. He would get isolated looks, and he would help shut down receivers. I mean, he's kind of putting down DeAndre Hopkins time and time again, year after year. That's the best wide receiver in the NFL, maybe next to Julio Jones right now. So this is a guy that is a game changer for Steve Spagnuolo and makes everybody around him better. If they got Jalen Ramsey, I would be ecstatic, and I would start really, really trumpeting a serious Super Bowl run.
Yeah, and one thing we did see, we saw a secondary sack from the Chiefs last weekend, you know, trying to be creative in what they did. And let's not forget the Honey Badgers, six most quarterback pressures from his defensive back role since he's been in the league. But when you look at this defense in how they played, what are your thoughts so far on the Honey Badger? Are we just, you know, tipping the iceberg? Are you expecting a lot more from the Honey Badger? Like that and Frank Clark, I know people are waiting for the big ticket items on defense to give us a little bit of something. Should we have a little bit more patience with them?
Absolutely. And honestly, the term tip of the iceberg for Tyrann Mathieu makes perfect amount of sense. That's the exact way that you should describe it, because he's not showing up in splash plays on your screen, but everything that he's doing is correct. He's making the players around him better. He helped Charvarius Ward by pressing Darren Waller before having to roll off on running back. He's the guy that's having to spin down into the box. He's robbing some of these crossing routes, and he's helping eliminate running backs in the passing game. Against some quick passing offenses, you have to have a player that can do that and take away some of those hot routes. Tyrann Mathieu's been doing that. And so teams haven't been throwing at him because he's been doing his job really well. Now, Frank Clark, on the other hand, Frank Clark is stuffing the run well. Frank Clark is averaging less than 2.5 yards per run to his side of the field. Teams don't want to run at him. He's shutting it down. Yes, I agree. Maybe some of his one-on-one matchups need to be better from a pass rush standpoint, but he's been getting chipped quite a bit. They've got him dropping into coverage. He dropped into coverage almost 12% of the passing snaps this week. So I do think the better things are to come from Frank Clark when you get into some of these quarterbacks that have longer drops, you know, aren't trying to get the ball out immediately. That's where Frank Clark is really going to show up in a big way.
Last question for you, and we'll stay right with that theme about Frank Clark. If you're ever going to set the edge, it's going to be this week. Lamar Jackson poses big problems with his mobility, that he could take a 3rd and 4 and he can pick up the first down with his legs. Again, 120 yards rushing, first quarterback ever to have those passing yards along with those running yards. Did it in college all the time. I mean, the only back-to-back guy to go 3,000, 1,000 in two straight years. Your approach to Lamar Jackson, can the Chiefs set the edge, or will Lamar Jackson give them fits?
Lamar Jackson is going to give them fits, but I don't think he'll give them at the sort of fits that we saw against the Dolphins, against the Cardinals. Tyrann Mathieu is going to be an integral part of this game. He's going to have to swing down and help set that edge as a force defender offense this week. They're also going to need their slot corner to come up and be able to set that edge as well. Active participants in the run game. Kendall Fuller and Tyrann Mathieu both have done that really, really well so far. So that is a benefit from it. Frank Clark is largely going to be tasked with the fullback dive or the running back dive that comes out of the pistol formation there. They have to force a dedicated read and be able to have their linebackers and safeties, you know, sort of hit their gaps correctly, take the guys that they are, and tackle in space. If they do that, they're going to take away that pistol read option real, real quick this week. And then, you know, if the Chiefs get up on the Ravens, Lamar's got a pass, and that's where you want him having to do his thing this week.
I know I said final question, but I have a final question. It's like being at a bar and you say it's my final drink. No, my final drink. Here you go. Mo Claiborne. We've got two more weeks without Mo Claiborne. When can you fully expect him to be ready? Because I'm thinking, all right, he might get a little playing time in game 5, game 6. I'm not expecting full Mo Claiborne until week 8.
I think that that's probably a fair assessment for Mo Claiborne. He hasn't been practicing with the team. He has the playbook, but he's not there in practice. He's not part of the installs. It's going to take him a little bit to spin up, especially since he came into camp late. So I do think that it's not going to be an immediate start in week five when he's available, but I do think we'll see him. And then, yeah, by the time week seven and week eight comes along, if they haven't added a corner yet, I do think that he will probably take over on the outside.
Craig, you're the best. Craig Stout, at Barley Hop on Twitter, arrowheadpride.com. Nobody, and I mean nobody, covers the Chiefs defense in the NFL draft like Craig Stout. Thanks a lot, my man.
Hey, thanks for having me on, Ben.
There you go, Craig Stout right there, arrowheadpride.com. And I think it's going to be interesting. Lamar Jackson, special athlete, he's finally proven it this year, and he's going to give him fits. And again, game one, he took Foles out, not extremely mobile. Gardner Minshew comes in, 22 of 25. You know, the guy that dresses like Dirk Diggler, played well against the Kansas City Chiefs. And then, of course, you got Derek Carr that I'm not a big fan of. Lamar Jackson's playing well, and trust me, Lamar Jackson wants this game. He wants the national respect. He wants the national cred. One way to get it is all the attention that's going to be put on this game. There's already people building this up. Lamar Jackson, Patrick Mahomes. I mean, we got to think about it. Who's going to be the quarterbacks in this league? You know, youth of the 80s, you got Jim Kelly and John Elway and Dan Marino, Dan Fouts. Like, what's the next generation? Because right now you got Breeze and Brady and Rodgers. Who's next? Mahomes? Watson? Andrew Luck, forget about that. He's done playing football. Can Lamar Jackson, Baker Mayfield, can these guys insert their names into the quarterbacks in the NFL? Changing gears now, because I don't have a college show tomorrow. It's the one I don't have because of a conflict with the Kansas City Royals. I had a chance to catch up with Wyatt Thompson, the voice of the Kansas State Wildcats. We talk all things Chris Klieman and why the Cats are so good this year. That's next.
Big at Night.
Welcome back to Pink at Night out here at Big Whiskey's, 135th Street, Overland Park. This place is absolutely incredible. Treated us really well today, and this is definitely a place I will be hitting brunch up with very, very soon. But I had a chance to catch up with Wyatt Thompson, the voice of the Kansas State Wildcats, talking about the amazing start that they're off to. Pleased to be joined now by the voice of the Kansas State Wildcats that you hear right here on 610 Sports Radio, Wyatt Thompson, who's off to a nice 3-0 start. Well, Wyatt isn't, but the Wildcats are. What's up, Wyatt?
I'm doing great. How are you? Good to talk to you again.
Hey, good. It's good talking to you, Wyatt. And, you know, I noticed that enthusiasm in your voice. You and I have talked, you know, even throughout the offseason about Chris Klieman coming into Kansas State. I felt it was a good hire. I felt it was a needed hire. And, you know, who knows what's going to happen in the future. But I think Kansas State got this right with his discipline and kind of his approach to the game of football. And so far, so good for the Wildcats.
Well, you said it well. I think this has been a really good start for K-State. I think the first couple of games, K-State was just so dominant. People really didn't know exactly what we had. And Coach Klieman said exactly that. We need a measuring stick game. They go to Mississippi State, and it wasn't perfect by any stretch of the imagination, but there were a lot of positives up and above and beyond winning the game. I think that the physicality in which they played, overcoming a couple of starters on defense, going down, having the lead most of the day, and then losing it in the third quarter and really being outplayed in the third, but then making a special teams play in the fourth and winning it in the fourth, all of those things were terrific things. And confidence is a wonderful thing in athletics, and right now Coach Klieman's done a great job of instilling, you know, a winning attitude and just a good work ethic with these guys, and they've really responded.
No, they really have. And, you know, you start off against Nicholls, and here's the thing about Nicholls. You know, we're talking about a team that did make it to the second round of the playoffs last year in FCS, and you never know what's going to happen in the first game. You just don't know because you're testing your guys for the first time. There's no preseason football. Then you play a MAC team in Bowling Green. The MAC team's, you know, are known to stand up and play Power 5 schools well. But the Mississippi State game, I thought, was a good litmus test, considering what they did in Manhattan the year before. And, you know, outside of maybe a few special teams gaffes with the muffed punts, but then they returned that with Clinton Knowles, you know, getting that kickoff return. But I felt they went in and matched the physicality of Mississippi State on their home turf. I guess I was more impressed with the physical play, both on the offense and defensive lines of Kansas State, before we even get to Skylar Thompson.
Well, I agree with you on both sides of the ball. I think the one constant about this team so far up and above Skyler has been the offensive line and how well they have played. It is a veteran group, as you know. There's 110 career starts with that group of five, and that includes Evan Curl, who as a fifth-year senior is starting really for the first time. So it kind of gives you an idea of how experienced the other four guys are. But I think the thing that was maybe overlooked a little bit by a lot of people, I don't mean just the people around here, I think even around the Big 12, was the depth that K-State had in the defensive front. If you think about it, Wyatt Hubert, Reggie Walker, Kyle Ball, Trey Deshaun, Mitty, Davies, all of those guys played a lot of football last year, and experience counts. And they didn't have to do a whole lot on the defensive front in the first two games, but I thought they were a major factor in the win at Mississippi State, and it was great to see.
Yeah, and it could have been even Kansas State could have even won this game by a couple more touchdowns, to be quite honest with you. Now, the running back situation is a little bit different for Kansas State. It's a grad transfer route that they decide to go with Gilbert and Brown and Trotter, you know, coming over from Ball State and North Carolina and Louisville. That seems to have made a big difference, bringing in that kind of experience, taking advantage of the grad transfer rule and bringing in some experience with guys that they kind of handpicked.
It's really an interesting story that I think interests a lot of people, if you will, because let's go back to last spring. The best way to say this and to put it into the proper perspective for fans, if they don't know, is when Coach Klieman got here, K-State did not have a running back on the roster who was on scholarship. Alex Barnes had gone to try to make it in the NFL. Mike McCoy's neck injury prevented him from playing, and he had to give up the game. And so what do you do? Well, they were very fortunate, had a contact that knew James Gilbert, and that worked out, and he's been awesome. Jordan Brown's been good. Harry Trotter's been good. But what I'm most excited about is I'm excited for those guys. Don't misunderstand this. They've been terrific. But there are a lot of talented young guys on this football team behind them. And over the course of about 9 months, it has gone from a major glaring weakness to a strength of this football team. People don't know that much yet about guys like Joe Irvin and Grayson and Clyde Price and people like that, but they will. Trust me, they will.
Well, yeah, and the true freshmen, you know, they get experience in that Bowling Green game. You know, Wright comes in the game, Irvin comes
in
the game.
Yeah, I mentioned Jacardier Wright. He
yeah.
should be as good as any of them.
Yeah.
220-pound kid. And so, yeah, it is a position of strength, no question.
Skylar Thompson is a guy, Wyatt, that a lot of people here in Kansas City know for what he did at Fort Osage. I would honestly put him in the top five high school athletes I've seen play in the Kansas City area. Wins that Simone Trophy Award, which we've seen guys go on and do great things when they win that award. Heck, Josh Freeman won that award. Darren Sproles won that award. Drew Locke won the award. It goes on and on and on. But he won it as the best athlete in Kansas City. And he just seems different this year. And I don't know if it's not looking over your shoulder or whatever it is, but he portrays that confidence, whether it's in the media sessions that he has or on the football field. He just seems like he has a grasp of this team and a confidence that I haven't seen.
Well, let's talk about the over-the-shoulder. That's significant. I am not going to try to downplay or underplay that in any way, shape, or form. But there's more to this story than that. And what I mean by that is, from the time Chris Klieman was hired, the one guy that was around constantly was Skylar Thompson, wanting to get to know Chris Klieman and Courtney Messingham and some of the other coaches and those transfer running backs that we talked about, how much time he spent working with them and the receivers in the summertime in the 7-on-7. I guess what I'm trying to describe is this guy looked at this as a new start, loved the offense as he was learning it, and really has just run with it. It's as simple as that. But there's a lot to it, but he's made it a pretty simple thing. He's all in, loves what he's doing, couldn't be happier. And you know this, he's been through a lot, so I'm thrilled for him, really am.
No, he has, and of course Kansas State doesn't play again until the 28th against a 3-0 Oklahoma State team on the road as Big 12 play commences. It's hard to grasp this conference at this point, Wyatt, as we're talking to Wyatt Thompson, the voice of the Wildcats. It's hard to tell. I mean, you look at Kansas State, they weren't getting any of the run in the preseason polls. Neither was Kansas. Kansas off to a pretty good start, right, even though I think they should have beat Coastal Carolina. But I don't have a firm grasp. I mean, Texas, a tough loss against LSU. Texas Tech, a tough loss against Arizona State. So I don't have a total feel of this conference yet. I see a lot of teams just trying to feel themselves out in this conference.
Well, I think you're on the money with that thought, and here's why. I'll say it this way. I think you have Oklahoma, who has clearly been the best team. Everybody thought that that was going to be the case. And then probably Texas. Those are the easy ones. After that, there's eight teams. Four of those eight have first-year coaches. So it's hard to get a real grasp and feel for what everybody's going to be like. As an example, everybody kind of thought Iowa State was going to be pretty good, and I think they are going to be pretty good. They lost a tough ball game to Iowa, but they're going to be rock solid. They're well coached. They play hard. Are they good enough to challenge Oklahoma? Well, maybe not, but there are questions with everybody else, whether it's Kansas, Kansas State, West Virginia. The one team that I believe is pretty darn good that not too many people are talking a whole heck of a lot about is Baylor. And we'll see them down the road here. They've got two good quarterbacks, but their coach has done a magnificent job for no longer than he's been there.
Yeah, no question. I think Baylor is going to be in there, but they score 56 and 63 points their first two games out. I just think the Big 12 is going to be interesting. That Iowa-Iowa State game was bizarre. All those lightning delays and weather delays. Those are screwy. Those really are. And it always happens this time of year. We always get those games where you have those kind of delays. What's it been like for Climate? Is the community, you know, I mean, what's it been like, you know, replacing Bill Snyder? Where would you say it is now from where it was? I know there's a respect factor there, but it's tough when you replace a legend. It really is.
Well, you would know this. I do a lot of these types of interviews, and what I have been saying to people is there are a lot of things that have impressed us about Chris Climate to this point. One of the ones that I talk about a lot is him trying to embrace what K-State football has been with Bill Snyder, and yet, in the same breath, being comfortable enough with his body of work, who he is, and what he does to put his own stamp on the program. I hope you follow what I'm saying here, because this is a supremely confident guy who I believe is very good at what he does. And he's put together a good staff, and these kids have jumped on board, and it's like they're having fun at working hard and winning football games. And, well, when you're doing that, life's pretty good. It may not last forever, but right now it's pretty good.
Well, he certainly is a winner, and he's got the championships to prove it, and he's got guys in the NFL as well from North Dakota State. Wyatt Thompson, the voice of the Wildcats, you can hear right here on 610 Sports Radio. Thanks a lot, Wyatt. I always enjoy the conversation.
Well, me too, partner. Appreciate the opportunity. Thank you so much.
There you go. Wyatt Thompson, the voice of the Kansas State Wildcats. You can hear him right here on 610 Sports Radio. We'll talk to Brandon Kiley. We'll finish up with a little Missouri talk at the end of the program. But coming up next, I'm going to go back to Jalen Ramsey and just why the Chiefs have to get this deal done. We talk about that next.
Bank at Night.
Welcome back to Bank at Night out here at Big Whiskey's out in Overland Park, and they've been a great host for us tonight. We'll do another one here in October. In about a month, we'll be at the one in Lee Summit. This one at 9100 West 135th Street, Overland Park, Kansas. So we'll be hitting both Big Whiskey's. Tremendous place to watch TVs, get your they have a ton of things, wraps, salads, some seafood, some steaks, tons of wings. I was impressed with the chicken wings. A lot of chicken wings. That seems to be the thing. You got to have chicken wings. You want people to watch football, drink some beer and some whiskey? Have some chicken wings. That's what I'm talking about. Jalen Ramsey. I don't know if you saw what Shannon Sharp said this morning. He said, you get Jalen Ramsey, they're going to the Super Bowl. Doug Marrone, the head coach of the Jags, is going to suit him up tomorrow night. He plays tomorrow night for the Jags on Thursday Night Football. To me, this will be something to watch tomorrow. Because here's the problem. As Ian Rappaport reported, the NFL rule is you play on Thursday night, you can't play two games in a week, which would be crazy. Could you imagine if you played Thursday night and played Sunday for the Chiefs or played Monday night? You can't do it. Can't do it. So if he plays Thursday night, which if you're Brett Veach, you got to think about that Earl Thomas deal. You got to think about they were going to pull the trigger on Earl Thomas. They were going to get Earl Thomas as a Chief. Then he goes out and hurts himself in that game. Chiefs were going to get him the week after that. Brett Veach made a run at him. And Andy Reid made a run at him in free agency. He thought he was coming here. They'd send, well, he was going to be on a plane to Kansas City. He ends up going to Baltimore, playing for those Ravens that we'll see tomorrow. So Earl Thomas, a member of the Ravens, and Terrez Paylor, I even asked him once. I said, all right, the Chiefs got the Badger. Would they have got Earl Thomas as well? And he said, yeah, they were going to go out and get both those guys. Can you imagine a secondary with Earl Thomas and with the Honey Badger? I'm not so worried about it at this point because I think Juan Thornhill has shown me the dog that he has in him. The Chiefs need nasty guys. And that's another thing Jalen Ramsey can bring. He talks junk. He's tough. He's extremely tough on the field, and he will talk that junk. And I have no problem with that being on the Kansas City Chiefs. Get some swag. The offense is full of swag. I want to see some swag from this defense. I want teams finally to fear the Chiefs defense. Because I'm looking at the Patriots right now, and that's all you do in sports. Who's the best and how can we get to where the best is? Because I'll tell you this much. There are so many teams looking around for the next Pat Mahomes. Denver tries to Pat Mahomes this division by going and getting Vic Fangio to be their head coach, defensive guy. Everybody else is going out and looking for offense in the offseason. They go on the defensive route because they realize Pat Mahomes is going to be a thorn in the side. John Gruden knows it. Gave me new quarterbacks just as well as anybody. John Gruden knows he's going to face Pat Mahomes, and Mahomes is going to be a thorn in his side forever. Just what he said about him after the game on Monday. Just dropping dimes, doing what he wants. Denver knows this. Elway knows this. Elway's trying to find that magic again. They bring in Joe Flacco, and Drew Lock backs him up. Drew Lock's hurt. Everybody's trying to find that Pat Mahomes magic. Coming up next, we talk about the Missouri Tigers really turning their season around with the one and only Brandon Kiley, producer of The Drive, that also puts out the True Sun podcast on 610 Sports Radio. We'll talk to Brandon next.
Bing at night.
Welcome back to Big at Night at a Big Whiskey's tonight out at Overland Park. What a great place to do a show. Huge thanks to Pete Sweeney stopping by out here live. And, of course, Craig Stout talking some Chiefs defense with us. And Wyatt Thompson, the voice of the Wildcats. So why not talk to a guy that knows about as much about Missouri football as any. Actually, we've got a couple to station, Carrington Harrison, Brandon Kiley. But usually do my Rush the Field on Thursday nights, but don't have a show tomorrow night because of the Royals, so I'm doing it tonight. Brandon Kiley, producer of The Drive and also the host of the True Sun podcast on the 435 Podcast Network and actually absolutely must listen to for any Tigers fans. What's up, BK?
What's going on, Bink? How you doing, man?
Good, man. My question is, how are you feeling? Because I'll go back to the infamous tweet when Missouri was up 14-0. And I'm not going to lie, I just about did the same tweet. I was like, man, wow, Missouri looks great. And then all of a sudden Wyoming comes just scrambling back. Just your thoughts about the adjustments they've made since game one. And I know they played SEMO last week or whatever, but they're still looking crisp on offense, something we haven't seen in a while.
So I would like it to be known that Mizzou is still good. I said at the time Mizzou is good. I still believe that to be true. I never really wavered from that, Bink. They lost the first game because they had three turnovers that were just absolutely crippling. And that happens sometimes. Like, it shouldn't have happened. It's embarrassing that it happened, but it happened. And so you go into game number two, and you're wondering, okay, is this who Mizzou really is, or are they a good team that had three turnovers in a game, and that just happens sometimes? And I think we've seen over the last 2 weeks they're a good team that had three turnovers in the first week. And so, moving forward, I expect them to be more of what they were in the last couple of weeks than what they were in week one.
Missouri's looking like I thought they would look, and Kelly Bryant has made a difference. That running game, for Missouri has been good, and we've actually seen the defense step up and kind of remedy situations. They were just out physical against the Wyoming game. And the one thing too, Brandon, and it's not an excuse, but it is an excuse, because a lot of times when a team plays their first game in college football, it's sloppy. There's no preseason football. You're banging heads against each other. And then for Missouri to go on the road, and I know it's not exactly a hornet's nest in Wyoming, but still, those fans were pumped up, jacked up. They had a Power 5 SEC team coming in. Those aren't the easiest games in the world.
They're not. It doesn't. Again, I think you're right. Like, we shouldn't excuse it, but you can't explain it, right? I look at this week's opponent, and I think it's pretty similar, actually. In a lot of ways, it's why I'm so excited about this game. Mizzou and South Carolina are kind of mirror images of each other.
Well, the whole South Carolina thing and getting the gear kicked off.
It happened with Mizzou as well. They just look like a team that needed another week before they could be ready for this season. And so, they lost the first game. It is what it is. But this team's still a good team, Dick. I really do believe that.
Yeah, they really are. I mean, do you think? I mean, in West Virginia picked 8th in the Big 12. Not a huge win against West Virginia that they had before SEMO, but it was playing West Virginia, getting used to Austin Kendall, the transfer from Oklahoma quarterback. But they got to play a Power 5 team, and they absolutely crushed them. I don't think West Virginia is very good, but it did give Missouri that Power 5 win. Now, when you're looking at preseason expectations for the SEC, and it's a mess right now. Like, I'm not 100% buying into Florida. I thought Kentucky was actually going to beat Florida at Kentucky, especially when Felipe Franks went down. I thought it was anybody's game. But I'm looking at the SEC, and I'm looking at the East, and right now it's Georgia and everybody else, because I think the SEC has a ton of questions, which I think bodes well for the Missouri Tigers in that conference.
I agree. I mean, Vink, here's a question for you. Who's the second best team in the SEC East right now? Like I said, in all sincerity, who's, in your opinion, the second-best team in the SEC?
In my opinion, at that point, it was Kentucky, but they lose their quarterback as well, and they had a backup quarterback playing against Florida, which Florida ended up having a backup quarterback as well. I thought Kentucky was going to take care of that game, Brandon. I thought they were – it was ridiculous, that point spread, and I'll be honest with you, Kentucky's won, at that point, 11 of the last 14 games, and they beat Florida – at Florida last year, and I thought they were going to take care of business. I am not buying into the University of Florida. Kentucky, no. It's got to be Missouri. South Carolina, I have no faith in. Tennessee is a mess at this point. It's just Georgia right now and everybody else.
The reason why I ask is because I tend to agree with you. I think Mizzou is the second best team in the division. Now, that doesn't mean they'll finish that way. They might not. Who knows? College football's weird, and when you're in, like, that muddled middle, sometimes weird stuff happens. But I really do believe that Mizzou's the second-best team in this division, and that both says a lot about what I think about Mizzou and also what I think about the division. The division stinks, Bink. Like, let's be honest. The division is terrible this year. Florida's not very good. I know they're ranked in the top 10 right now. You can bet against that team each and every week against the point spread, and more often than not, you're going to make yourself some money because they're not as good as the public believes that they are. The reason why they're ranked in the top 10 is because, A, they're Florida, B, people think the SEC is better than it is, and C, the rest of college football is just not all that good. Every year we go into the season knowing there's about 5 teams that really matter, and from 6 to 25, they're more or less interchangeable. And I think that's how the SEC East is this year. I think Florida and South Carolina and Kentucky and Mizzou, you could throw them into a blender and you could get 20 different results over the course of 20 different simulations. I think Mizzou out of those four teams is the best. I don't know that it'll finish that way, but I really do believe that right now, today, they're the second best team in that division. And that says a lot about where the division is today.
We have a proven quarterback that was outstanding at Clemson. You have a running game and Larry Roundtree. I really like the way he runs the ball. It's a nice combination with Tyler Beatty, give that speed element. But best tight end in college football in Albert O. Love Jalen Knox at wide receiver. I think the addition of Jonathan Nance, even though, go back, he's had great games the last couple, but a couple nice touchdowns against Wyoming. I'm looking at this offense, and it's loaded. I mean, this offense is absolutely loaded. My question is, can the defense stand up? Is Barry Odom done enough with this defense that what happened in Wyoming won't happen? I mean, they got beat by a quarterback that couldn't complete a pass.
Yeah, and that's the big question. And that's why this is the week we're going to start to learn some answers. I know some questions were answered in week one in a negative direction, but I really do continue. I don't want to harp on this, but I think week one was all about the turnovers. And sometimes variance happens in college football, and that game was all about variance, and a weird result happened. I think we're going to start to learn real significant things about the Mizzou football team this weekend for the first time all year. You didn't really learn anything against that West Virginia team. You definitely didn't learn anything last weekend against BMO. That was a glorified scrimmage that was played at Pro Field. This weekend, you're going to learn some stuff. South Carolina's solid. And if you don't play your best game, they can beat you. Even on the road, they can beat you. They've got a really good running game. They've got a freshman quarterback that came in last week and looked really good, actually, against Alabama, which is impressive, to say the least. They've got a defense that has a really solid front four and can get after you if you're trying to run it down their throats, or if you're trying to take a seven-step drop and try to run around the way that sometimes Kelly Bryant does. This is a deep team that can beat Mizzou, but I'm really looking forward to finding out exactly what this run defense looks like, because that's something South Carolina does really well. Got a really good running back, a senior, has been injured for most of his career there. He can beat you if you're not on your A game, and Mizzou's defense did not look good against the run in week one, looked great the last 2 weeks, albeit against weak opponents. I'm also interested to see what Mizzou's running game looks like in this game. You mentioned Larry Roundtree. He's been a little less than I expected this year. I thought he was going to be one of the better running backs in the country. He certainly hasn't been that. This is the type of game where he needs to show up along with Tyler Beatty. So those are the two things that I'm really looking for. Week one, they were absolutely destroyed up front by Wyoming. They need to correct that this week if they're going to be able to beat South Carolina.
You surprised at Kelly Bryant? I mean, this guy did show something going to a team that had a bowl ban on it. But he seems to be playing the part, and he seems to have grabbed that leadership role right off the bat. As you said before, I mean, this Mizzou team looks like they have a lot of fun.
Yeah, you know, I am a little bit impressed by him. And it's not so much like the behind-the-scenes stuff. None of that really surprises me, because once his teammates from Clemson made the road trip to Mizzou for Mizzou's spring game, I'm all interested to know about what Kelly Bryant was as a person. That you don't just do that as a college student, doing a 10-hour road trip out to Columbia, Missouri for no reason just to go watch a spring game. No, that happened because those guys loved Kelly Bryant. That said a lot to me about what he was as a person. As a player, I've been really impressed by the accuracy, by his ability to really conduct the offense, to keep them on time. He looks like a solid quarterback. And the one thing that I want to see more from him is the running. If you look at the stats right now, it'll say he has fewer than 25 yards rushing on the season. Now, some of that is skewed because they incorporate sacks in the rushing stats in college football, which is stupid, but another conversation for another day. He's had fewer than 75 rushing yards if you take out those sacks all season. I thought we'd be talking about a quarterback that would have 75 rushing yards per game this season. So that is one thing that has been a little bit surprising on the opposite end of the spectrum, but if you're telling me I have to trade a guy that's going to be super accurate, that's going to keep the offense on time, and is going to have the mobility that he does to be able to keep his eyes down the field for not having those rushing yards, I mean, any Mizzou fan would take that trade any day of the week.
And the other thing, and final thing for you, Brandon, that South End Zone project, Gary Pinkel had dreamed of that. He kept trying to sell the administration. If we're going to keep up with the Joneses, we've got to have better facilities. And right now, you could put Missouri's facilities. I mean, it's not quite Alabama level, but as far as the SEC, I mean, they've got one of the better facility groups in the conference.
They do, and that's going to be big for, I mean, everything. It's going to be big for the fan base. It's going to be big for recruiting. It's going to be big for just the quality of life of the guys that are on campus. I think their situation when it came to the facilities a year ago, prior to these things being built, it just wasn't good. I mean, it was inconvenient. They didn't have the stuff that they needed. Every other program in the country, pretty much, has some sort of quality facilities. Now, not all of them are on the level of Mizzou, I'm with you. But all of them have good facilities at this point. Mizzou's were not good, and they needed to upgrade. So whether it was the South End Zone project, which is just, I mean, state-of-the-art stuff, it's top 20% in the country. This is as good as it gets, really. Whether it was that or just an improvement to what they had previously, they had to get something done. They knew that. Gary Pinkel knew that. And so I'm glad they were able to finally get it done. And more importantly, I'm glad that it is what it is for the fans as well, who are going to be able to enjoy what is a really cool area, certainly with fans being able to get actually on field level when they get to the stadium. And if you haven't been to the stadium yet this year for any home game, one thing that you're going to want to get, want to do is get there a little bit early, because the entrances that they're doing now are really cool. So I highly recommend, if you're going to the game on Saturday, get there a little bit early, so that way you can see the entrances as Mizzou comes on the field.
There you go, Braden and Kylie. Hear him every day on The Drive, the producer, plus a tremendous podcast, True Sun Podcast. Thanks a lot, Braden. Have a good night, my friend. There you go. Thanks to Big Whiskeys for having us out. Thanks for Kramer, the Crame Dog, producing the operation. Talk to you guys soon.
Big at Night.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend, or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.